Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to find out how vitamin C can be used against COVID. The Medical College of Georgia Center for Healthy Aging has some questions and answers on that. In fact, we have two studies from peer-reviewed literature showing that vitamin C really helps destroy a lot of viruses in the body and could be used concerning COVID. That's important. We have a lot of health material today, but also we have been inundated with questions of people in the audience who are very concerned, especially those living in states where freedom of choice issues is not allowed, where the state dictates what you can and can't do with your body. New York State's Bar Association just recommended last week to the governor that he indeed does have the constitutional power to mandate vaccines, the corona vaccine. At the same time this is occurring, newspapers and broadcast stations around the world are condemning anyone who would challenge any aspect of the COVID narrative. Anyone who challenges any vaccine safety and efficacy, no matter how much proof and truth and science you have on your side, you're to be condemned and ridiculed and mocked and shamed and deplatformed. Google's been doing it for some time. Facebook does it, and now Wikipedia is being used as the so-called official source of truth and facts from Google. Wow. And they're the most unreliable source I could think of, in my opinion, on any issue of health. Their bias is so palpable and so significant. So we have a lawyer, one of the world's leading litigators, who won in Germany. He's German. He's both practiced in America and Germany, against Volkswagen and Deutsche Bank, two of the most powerful corporations in the world, and especially in Germany. And he won. And he showed that they were both engaged in illegal activities. He is now so concerned about the deceptions, half-truths, and the false narrative being delivered about COVID that he has gained the trust of a large group of attorneys who are working with him to bring lawsuits in the United States and throughout the world. He is also showing that those people who originally instigated everything on COVID, calling it a pandemic, we have to inoculate everyone. He's calling them out and showing where they're not accurate. Today, you will hear never before heard information about who's behind this, how they were having meetings to plan this prior to the COVID outbreak. Almost a year before the COVID outbreak, they were having meetings, including Bill and Melissa Gates Foundation and the Burroughs Wellcome Foundation. The Burroughs Wellcome makes AZT, in my opinion, the most dangerous and lethal medication ever given, should never have been given to anyone. But they're now controlling everything about COVID. He is there to challenge. So he will be the one who will be helping with the litigation to protect your interest. Robert Kennedy Jr. is working with him. Mary Holland, you'll hear Mary Holland later this week on the show. Danny Sheehan, constitutional lawyer, will also be on the program. John Whitehead, constitutional attorney, on the program. We have lined up the top constitutional law minds to be on this program later this week, showing you what rights, if any, that we actually have to say, my body is my sovereign possession, not yours. So how are they going to get away with it? And for the average person, they have no resources to fight back. They'll just stay there and be inoculated with a completely experimental vaccine. So we're going to try to demysticize a lot of the information on COVID today. Richard Gale will be joining me. And by the way, Richard and I have worked for almost 13 years when I hired him. And he is a graduate with advanced degrees from University of Chicago. He worked inside the genome projects and genetic engineering companies until he saw what was going wrong. And then he's working with us. So he's a scholar. He'll be giving his opinion on these issues. That's our program. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. I've had the good fortune owning the Tri-State Healing Center back in the late 80s and all through the 90s and into 2000s to see thousands of individuals come forward with diseases that their regular physicians and hospitals and centers were not able to reverse, even slow down, and see them reversed, major cures, including 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS who were never charged a penny, by the way. And we saw 8 of those individuals at the Tri-State Healing Center reverse all clinical symptoms, but more importantly, their blood chemistry showed normal T-cell, no viral load, and HIV negative from HIV positive. We had all of the research to prove that. Vitamin C was a very important part of that therapy. Massive amounts of intravenous vitamin C were given to these individuals, plus homeopathic zeolites, 15 glasses of fresh organic juice a day, including bitter melon juice. And they were also given individualized nutritional counseling. Dolores Perry, our registered dietitian, was doing that. And our nurse intake person would sit and go over every single thing about a person. And then every Monday, a group of us would meet. We had different disciplines. We had 12 board-certified physicians, but we also had Dr. Amir Gadol, the holistic dentist, because a lot of problems start in a person's mouth. You've got to eliminate local focal infections. I learned that lesson from the great Dr. Joseph Issels in Germany. Before he treated any terminal patient, he always took care of any of the local infections, many of them originating in bad teeth, bad gums. We also had chiropractors such as Mitchell Proppen. We had acupuncturists, colon hydrotherapists, Dr. Donald Mullen, who had been with the Albert Ellis Center over on the east side, very famous center. I knew Albert Ellis. And Donald came over to do humanistic psychological counseling on the patients. Dr. Michael Ellner. So Dr. Elaine Kahn gave counseling. So we had a massive amount of people on our medical team. And we approached everything holistically and with integration. So if people want to know how did that happen, it happened by team effort. Yes, I created the protocols and I directed it. But these are the frontline physicians and healers who were there to make sure this was implemented. So I can tell you that vitamin C was crucial in its antiviral activity. Not only did we find in blood chemistries done by Roche Labs that all the hospitals use and doctors use every day, but people would come in and their blood was like a sewer, especially the intravenous drug users. They would have hepatitis, herpes, cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, Coxsackie, but they had every virus you could imagine, and bacteria, and parasites. The vitamin C was crucial to helping to strengthen their immune system and had strong antiviral and anti-cancer properties. We had a lot of cancer patients who reversed their disease completely. One of the most remarkable cases was a gentleman who came up one day. He actually didn't come up. His daughter came up. And she gave her name, and she said, I'm a medical doctor, board certified. I want to tell you right up front, this is not what I recommend for my father. It's his choice, but to me, this is all nonsense. I thought, okay. So you're calling it nonsense. You've never interviewed a physician. You've never interviewed a patient. You've never seen the articles written. Boy, that's a nice open mind to have. So I walked down to from the second floor to the first floor, and there was this gentleman. His name was Ed Finkelstein, and his wife, Dolly Finkelstein, was in the car, parked right outside. And he couldn't make it up the steps. He had 95% blocked carotid artery. And he said, look, I'm an engineer. I'm a senior citizen, and I'm told I must have this operation. I'm going to die. But I also, being an engineer, want to know the facts, and there's a very high death rate on the operating table of people my age, and within the next year, even more chance of dying. So it's like 50-50. And those are not odds I want. So I came here hoping that maybe you could help me with some protocol de-occlude this artery. I said, I'm happy to help you. I got frowns from the two women in the car. So anyhow, I put him on a very comprehensive protocol. And over the next 6 months, sure enough, his arteries began to clear and heal. The epithelial lining of the arteries healed. He was on very high dose vitamin C. I think at that point he was up to 100,000 milligrams a day, but a lot of other protocols as well, all plant-based diet, etc. And then one day his wife came with him and upstairs, and she just commented that Ed is making remarkable progress, and we're very pleased. He no longer has the intermittent claudication, pain in his calves, etc. But she had Bell's palsy that day, and I said, would you like me to give you protocol? I teach nursing. Nothing in medicine can reverse Bell's palsy. You might have this the rest of your life, or you know, maybe for a shorter period of time, but there's nothing. I would know. I checked everything. I said, okay. And that could be absolutely true. But what do you got to lose by just trying a protocol? So reluctantly, she tried a protocol. They did it together. When he was getting his, she got hers. 2 weeks later, no Bell's palsy. None. Face normal. No longer that droop on the left side of the mouth coming down and the eye. And she's my guide. She said, I'm angry and I'm outraged. I said, by what? She said, the fact that I didn't know any of this existed. My daughter and I have been so prejudiced against anything natural because we're both, she's a medical doctor, very orthodox. I teach nursing, very orthodox. We just didn't know any of this existed. So she started coming with him. Well, guess what happened a year later? They came every Sunday to the Natural Living and Morning Walking Club, and lo and behold, they both won the New York Roadrunning Club Senior Athletes of the Year, the USA Track and Field Senior Athletes of the Year. I remember he called me and he says, Gary, guess what? I beat the Olympian Ted Corbett. Good for you. And we would hold our own club would hold an annual award ceremony. And we had some of the top athletes in the world. They started off as regular people, became elite athletes. All were vegan, healthy, no drugs, no alcohol, no coffee, no sugar, etc. And by the way, they're still competing today and winning. In any case, Dorothy talked about her Bell's palsy that she had taken 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C. And one of the people asked, well, why isn't everyone who has Bell's palsy made aware of this? I said, for the same reason that other conditions like full-blown AIDS that we've reversed, nobody will talk about. I'm giving all this as background because here it was, an oasis of healing and positivity in the middle of Manhattan. We were packed, and yet no one from the major media, except the African-American media, Bill Tatum of the Amsterdam News, Tony Brown of Tony Brown's Journal and PBS, Earl Caldwell, Bill McCreary, multi-Emmy award-winning producer from Channel 5, they came, they saw, they challenged us over months to prove, and we met that challenge, and then they went on the air and talked about it. No one else in the media. That shows you the blackout that was on this, the prejudice against it. So right now, I just spoke with a physician who's a friend of mine, and he published an article in a peer-reviewed journal on how a holistic protocol could help with COVID. And the heart of that was high-dose vitamin C, but also ozone. And he was warned by the government not to share this with anyone. Take down all your links. You can't share this information. He's not selling anything. But they're not even allowing anything that is natural, non-toxic to be discussed when it comes to COVID. So just want to share that with you. So here the Medical College of Georgia is saying, yeah, this was published in the journal Aging and Disease about the role of vitamin C as an intravenous therapy. And they're looking at transporters, meaning how do you get vitamin C as a ascorbic acid to be converted by the liver and then put into the cells as ascorbate. Simple. And we could have told them this in a heartbeat, and that is, use quercetin. Anytime you use quercetin with vitamin C, it's a greater enhancement utilization. And they're saying here that the lack of immunity against coronavirus is looking at vitamin C deficiency, and they're fighting vitamin C deficiency in all these corona patients and people in intensive care. So one more thing you can do. Understand that those who are most susceptible to dying or becoming seriously ill from COVID are those who already have a defect in their immune system, meaning they're suffering from multiple comorbidities. So shouldn't we be helping those conditions in addition to proper sanitation, masks, and social distancing? Shouldn't we be offering people who work in the field low dose, weekly hydroxychloroquine with zinc and zithromycin? Shouldn't we offer anyone who shows that not just being positive, but they actually manifesting symptoms, cough, fever, dizziness, nausea, and then retest them to make sure that that's not, that's just not flu. And so we can then give them that treatment plus up their vitamin C. Everybody should be taking more vitamin C. We have a national deficiency of it, and we have a national autoimmune disease escalation. So something to think about. Now, adding on to that, this is from the University of Otago, O-T-A-G-O, which is in New Zealand. It's an area, a community called Christchurch, and they do a lot of research there, a lot of very good research. And they found, quote, this is according to them, investigation into the role of vitamin C in the prevention and treatment of pneumonia and sepsis has been underway for many decades. This research has laid a strong foundation for translation of these findings into patients with severe coronavirus disease. Research has indicated that patients with pneumonia and sepsis are low in vitamin C status and elevated oxidative stress. Administration of vitamin C to patients with pneumonia can decrease the severity and duration of the disease. Critical ill patients with sepsis, by the way, which kills over 300,000 people a year, require intravenous administration of gram, that's 1,000 milligrams minimum, of vitamin C to normalize plasma levels. Generally, that's anywhere from the low end 5,000 milligrams to the high end of 30,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenous. The vitamin C has physiologic functions, many of which are relevant to COVID-19. These include its antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, antithrombotic, and immune modulatory functions. Preliminary observational studies indicate low vitamin C status, meaning you're deficient in vitamin C, is critically ill patients with COVID-19. So just imagine this. Here we have people who are being tested with a extremely faulty, problematic diagnostic procedure called the PCR test. It was never meant to tell you whether or not you're infected and how bad your infection is. It was meant to find a particle of a virus, magnify it, and if you have to magnify it many, many times, that means it's too low in your body. Could be years old, it's dead, and it's not doing anything. Versus someone who tests positive who has active symptoms and should be immediately treated, in my opinion, with hydroxychloroquine combination, but also vitamin C, vitamin D, astragalus, echinacea, podiarco, and vitamin A. But now they're acknowledging this, and think if we put people nationally on a healthy, clean, plant-based diet, got them to lose weight. Comorbidity, number one, obesity. And we have at least one-third of all American adults who are obese. So we would help prevent these people from getting infected and then getting sick and dying. And those who are still using hydroxychloroquine at high doses when you're in intensive care, you're killing the patients. Hydroxychloroquine is only meant to be used at low doses, like 200 to 400 milligrams once or twice a day, depending upon what the doctor suggests. In patients at the very beginning of the disease, the first 7 days, never when they're at the advanced stage, at high doses. So are they that stupid, or are they creating a protocol to fail? That's just on vitamin C and why we should pay careful attention to this. That's important. We're 20 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear, because this was just done a few days ago, there's a discussion that's going on, and it was on a film program, a podcast called Value Internet, Value Tenainment by Patrick Burt David. And the person that you're going to be hearing in this is the lawyer, and he's going to make 2 points in 2 short clips. The most important point from my perspective, he mentions in the second clip. This you have not heard before. This is brand new, and this could bring down the entire COVID edifice. Back in a moment with that clip.
Vodak, he too said, we have to first find out what is really going on. We have to know about the real facts, not just believe the narrative that the government is telling us, but we have to take a much closer look. And then he put me in touch with another attorney, a woman attorney by the name of Viviana Fischer. She's an economist and an attorney. And my wife and I, plus our dogs, flew back to Germany. I got in touch with her and 2 more lawyers who I had known from my work at Transparency International, which is a anti-corruption NGO, which I used to work with. And we got together and we decided, it doesn't look like the government is going to take a closer look at what's going on. So we're going to just take over and we're going to do what the government's supposed to do. So what we're doing basically with this investigative Corona investigative committee is we were almost acting like a moot court or it was almost like a mock trial. We decided to ask 4 or 3 basic questions. How dangerous is the virus really? The second question, how much can we trust the PCR test, the positive results? What does it really mean? And the third question, which is really a 2-part question, is how much damage do these anti-corona measures do both to the economy and to the health and well-being of the world's population? Now, the latter is very easily answered. This is probably the worst crisis that the world has ever been in, with so many people dying, in my view, in our view, after all of what we've heard from our expert witnesses, completely in vain. People who didn't get an operation, surgical procedures that were postponed, therapeutic measures that were not done. My sister's a nurse. She works at a hospital in my hometown in Bremen, which is a port city. And she kept telling me, Rainer, there's something wrong. This entire hospital is almost empty. There's no one here. And we're still waiting for all these COVID patients, but there's no one coming. Finally, she had 2 COVID patients. They died. One of them was 80-something, and the other one was 45, but she was a crack addict. So what we initially thought would hit us like a wave because of all the announcement of Drosten and in England, what we thought would be a real pandemic turned out to be the common flu, or if it is something different, it's no more lethal than the common flu. But back then, when we started our work on July 10th, we didn't know that. We just had questions. We wanted to get answers to these questions. Now, the last question I just answered, the first question is also simply answered because that's what the WHO just came down with explaining that they agree with Ioannidis's assessment that this is no worse than the common flu at a mortality rate of 0.14%. So the most important question was, what is it with these PCR tests? Because if there's no real danger, what are these PCR tests telling us? Because the government kept telling us it tells you how many people are infected with whatever. So that's what we then decided to concentrate on. We asked a bunch of scientists, Professor Kemmerer of the university, she's an immunologist of the University of Würzburg here in Germany, Professor Kappel, who's from the Netherlands, another immunologist, and there's Dr. Arve from Austria, a microbiologist, another immunologist was Dolores Cahill. She's great, from Ireland. And each and every one told us this PCR test is incapable of telling us anything about infections. Then I looked up, this came out a couple of weeks ago. Then I read an article by someone who is a real heavyweight in the pharmaceutical industry, the former vice president of Pfizer. He was, I think, for 16 years, he was vice president, and he was also the chief scientist. And I read up what he told us about the PCR test. Before I did that, I looked at all the videos I could find of Carrie Mullis. Carrie Mullis is the inventor of the PCR test. He got a Nobel Prize for it. He died, unfortunately, late last year. And he, on numerous occasions, told everybody that his PCR test is a great test, but it is not good for detecting any infections. And an additional problem with this PCR test is that what happens is, with these swabs, you take molecules of fragments of molecules from the body, which are totally, completely invisible to the human eye. So in order to make them visible, you have to kind of blow them up, amplify them, is what they call this. Put them into a machine, then they're amplified until finally they become visible. At how many cycles whatever becomes visible is very important, because this is the general agreement right now across the world, including scientists who write articles in the New York Times, which is another one of the mainstream media. They all agree that anything above 35 cycles makes no scientific sense anymore. A leading German public health agency in Frankfurt, they're saying we disregard anything over 25 cycles, because we realize that it tells us a lot of things, but nothing about infections with this virus. Now, these tests, the ones that we're talking about, the Drosten test, was set at 45 cycles. So it was, this is what we believe now, it was deliberately set to produce as many positive results as possible. Now, Dr. Yeadon of former Pfizer, he says these tests are completely useless. He says this test is fatally flawed and must, four capital letters, immediately be withdrawn and never used again in this setting unless shown to be fixed. And his article ends with the following: I have explained how a hopelessly performing diagnostic test has been and continues to be used, not for diagnosis of disease, but it seems solely to create fear. And that's what this is all about. That's what this is all about. It's about creating fear so that people will not ask any questions, but do as they're told. I know this because there was a paper that was leaked by someone in the German at the Office of the German Secretary of the Interior. And this paper is now called the Panic Paper. And it includes explicit directions for the government of how to create panic. One of the things that is stated in there is make children feel responsible for the, and this is a direct quote, for the tortured deaths of their parents and grandparents if they don't adhere to the social distancing rules, the mask wearing rules, all these anti-corona regulations. So that's when I decided, when we learned this, I decided this is absolutely completely wrong. This is not about a corona pandemic. This is a PCR test pandemic, but for what reason? Well, this is something that I'm saying this because I can prove this in court, because all of the people who we listen to in our corona committee will definitely state the same things as expert witnesses in a court of law. So we can prove that the virus is no more dangerous than the common flu. And we can prove that the assertion that PCR tests can detect infections with the coronavirus is definitely completely wrong. I forgot to mention that Dr. Mike Yeadon says that at least 94% of the positive results are false positives, if not more.
In a moment, part two, but let me put this in lay language perspective. Right now, every day, the front page, taking up more space than anything else on the front page of New York Times, is new cases. 100,000 new, 100,000 new, 100,000 new, almost daily. What they're not doing is putting it in proper context. It's almost mandatory now for people in different jobs, in different universities, in different athletic programs to be tested, sometimes repeatedly, like in the National Football League. They have to be tested almost every week. So you're going to have far more people tested today than at any other time. They are simply, they have weaponized the word PCR positive. They've made that now a case, meaning you're actively infected. Nothing could be further from the truth. There's absolutely no validity to that statement that everyone who tests positive for PCR has the actual virus and is active in their body. Secondly, it is nonspecific, the PCR test, meaning you could have an old virus dead in your body and it will test positive. Third, as he said, it's about the amplifications, which means that if you have low amplifications, let's say that they do 5 amplifications and they see the virus, the whole virus, that means that you may have an active virus. But what if they have to keep amplifying it again and again and again and again? It means that above 35, there's almost no opportunity for you to be sick. And they're not looking for the whole virus. They're just looking for a fragment of a virus, something that wouldn't cause you a problem. So then what's missing? Well, first of all, honest science is missing. They should have 2 categories. PCR positive, then reconfirm with a different test. So you have a backup test to see were you positive on both. And if you're not, if you're positive on one and negative on the other, then you can't be labeled either, positive or negative. But what's missing completely is what medicine, nursing, and every other occupation that deals with public health has always done. You listen to what the patient is saying. If the patient is producing symptoms similar to what we would call COVID or pneumonia or anything else, that's what every doctor does. How are you feeling? Let's take a look. How are you breathing? They check your lungs. They check your chest. They check your blood pressure. We're saying now you don't have to do any of that. All you have to do is take a test. So when testing becomes the priority and not the interfacing between the doctor, the healthcare practitioner, and the patient, then medicine is upside down. So then you're going to have a lot of false positives, but this test is known to give false positives or false negatives. So then what do? You take a completely healthy person and you create a political and hence backed by law policy, you can't leave your work or you can't leave your apartment. And that is where we've gone. And that is dangerous. I will have a complete breakdown by one of the most knowledgeable physician scientists on the planet on PCR tomorrow, published in Global Research. We posted the article today so you can read it for yourself with all the scientific references showing you how false this test is and why it should not be used because it doesn't measure your infectivity. So if you don't have an infection, what is the point of testing positive? Because you're going to be labeled by case as if you were infected. Do you understand? You can have a positive test and have no health problems whatsoever. You can't be spreading it or you can't be sick yourself. But because it's not measuring viral load, how many viruses do you have to have in your body before they manifest symptoms? Then you can spread it. So they're terrorizing the public. He is right. Now let's go to part two because he says something even more important in part two that you have not heard before.
It is starting only now, because only now do people begin to understand here in Germany and in the rest of Europe, probably in the United States as well, that this is not something that's going to be over within a very short period of time. It's not like you can say, maybe another month or so, because the people who are behind this, the people who are trying to make as much money out of this as possible and who are trying to, and that's much more important, exert control over us, will not let up so fast. So the judiciary is the last anchor, so to speak, of democracy. If global corporations believe that they're above the law, just like I explained in the context of Deutsche Bank and VW, if they believe they're above the law, and if they then decide that they're going to lobby politicians in a very massive way, I'm going to explain this to you in a second, then all of a sudden you have global corporations overreaching, doing things that really shouldn't be in their power, because you have to remember, the WHO, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, they're all private, supranational, private organizations. The World Economic Forum, for example, was invented by a German by the name of Klaus Schwab. He's a private person. This is an extremely powerful organization right now, because they lobbied politicians through their annual meetings at Davos. You may have heard of this. That's where they mingle. And that's where many politicians who may not be the toughest people in the world, but who constantly have to pretend that they're in power and that they know what they're doing, where many, many politicians are really flattered by being so close to the really powerful. So you have the self-appointed political elites, and you have the self-appointed corporate elites who are meeting over and over again. And they're much too close. They're so close that in the meantime, they have, in some instances, usurped the government's powers, sovereign powers. For example, the most important right that we have all over the world is the right to free speech. It's the fundamental right. It's the most important right for a democracy, because you have to be able to discuss different opinions, which is not happening right now. And the power to regulate this should be the government's power. But look at what's happening. My English version of my video was taken down by YouTube. That's Google. So they believe that they have the power to censor us. That is not right. We have to take back the powers from them and put them back to where it belongs, to the government. And we have to take a really close look at who is in government and who became too close to these corporations. But that's basically what's been happening. And I was going to tell you the concrete instance of how we became alerted to this. One of us happened to watch a video clip on the internet. It was filmed in May of 2019. And this was a Congress that was held by the leading German governmental party, CDU, which is short for Christian Democratic Union. We have a grand coalition, which is ruling our country, and the stronger one of the two parties is the CDU. They held this Congress in May of 2019. Now, you would expect all of the people who play a role in this party to be there. Angela Merkel was there, the Secretary of Health, his name is Jens Spahn, he was there. But in addition to that, there was this now infamous professor, Dr. Christian Drosten of Charité University, the one who pushed the idea that this is going to be a really dangerous pandemic, and the one who convinced the world, not just Germany, but the world, because his test was recommended by the World Health Organization to be used all over the world. He convinced the world that with PCR tests, you can see how many people are infected with the coronavirus, with COVID. So he was there. And at first I thought, well, maybe he's a member of the CDU. No, there's more. There was Professor Wheeler. He runs the German equivalent of the CDC, the RKI. Professor Wheeler, who is a veterinarian. How did he get into that position? Then there was Tedros of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros. Many people think he's a doctor. No, he's a philosopher. And there were the two leading lobbyists of the two biggest, most important, richest healthcare organizations in the world, which is on the one hand, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and on the other hand, the Wellcome Trust. They were all there. Now, this could have been a coincidence, but we kept looking, and then we could see that these people had met over and over and over again through the years. And these very same people who met in May of 2019, they're the ones who then called the pandemic in March of 2020, the very same people. And it was Drosten whose paper, which is a very, he wrote a paper in January 23rd, I think it was published. And the expert who we spoke with say it's really sloppy. He wrote it with other authors. It's very sloppy. But it's the most important, it's the centerpiece of this, I was going to say, campaign of this pandemic, because it spells out that with a PCR test that he invented specifically for this purpose, we would be able to tell who is infected and how many people are infected. A blatant lie, as we now know. At the same time, this is another thing, we found this out a week ago, there was a Chinese paper, which was also written about this pandemic and how to best fight it. The Chinese paper was very well done. And one of the professors who advises us on our committee said, the Chinese don't need any advice from the Germans. They don't need any help from us. They could have taken the Chinese paper. And now it turns out the Drosten paper was only there to convince the rest of the world to use the PCR tests in order to test for infections. The Chinese paper seems to be the one that was used by the Chinese. Now, the Chinese don't have a pandemic anymore. They understood very quickly that this is made up. Maybe they took part in making this up.
Okay. Richard Gell is on the line now. Richard's not just the executive producer of the show, but also he is a scholar in residence. Richard, give us your impression from what you've heard from this lawyer, internationally respected jurist, and the other three lawyers, all respected, who are working on his behest in order to bring this into courts around the world. On the next clip later this week, you'll hear where they're going to be suing people in the United States. And he's been working with Robert Kennedy Jr. and others, Mary Holland, who we're going to have on this week. Your impression of what you've learned from this today, please.
Well, Christian Drosten, or Drosten, it's spelled, if people want to kind of Google, it's D-R-O-S-T-E-N. That's his name. He's young. He's only 48 years old. Member of Germany's Ministry of Health. Now, he had developed the first PCR test for the SARS virus, the first one back in, it was only several days after the CDC had published its release that they had isolated the SARS virus. So it was only days after that in which he then quickly developed this PCR for the coronavirus. But that's the SARS. That's the original one. And also I discovered that he also receives funding for his research from Glaxo, which is the same as the Wellcome Foundation.
They're the ones who made AZT.
Right, and the Wellcome Foundation is the one that this German American lawyer had mentioned was at this Congress in May of 2019, and also he receives funding from Abbott. If I'm not mistaken, I think somehow PCR technology had actually shifted hands over to Abbott at one time, because Abbott's primarily a diagnostic. They do drugs as well, but they're very big in diagnostics. So when Cetus had sold PCR to, I believe it was Baxter, actually the company I worked with, we were the ones who sold it because we had taken over Cetus. And then I believe it went over to Abbott afterwards. So he's receiving funding from the same groups that were involved in this Congress. And, this also goes back, I think, from what he's saying, also to these studies that we're looking at concerning the Moderna study that was just announced today. You know, they're claiming a 94% efficacy rate, and then also the Pfizer study that was claiming, or trials that were claiming the 90%. What I cannot locate and cannot find is, and I don't believe it's been released, is in these claims they're making, what test are they using? You know, what tests, when they're making this, the claim that these it's protecting the people, and that only 10% of them, or in the case of Moderna, then 6%
Richard, yeah. Let's just focus on this now.
Okay.
The whole world is excited based upon lining up to get the vaccine. However, all across the world, publications are now condemning and attacking anyone who challenges the safety and efficacy of any vaccine. And therefore, they want to make it law by law. You cannot criticize a vaccine. This is now what is going on. People are not aware of this. So tell us what's wrong with the story that there's a 90% efficacy rate with the vaccine, when it's what's left out of the story is most concerning to us.
Well, most concerning for us is there's been no data, safety data has been released. So that would be the number one for me. The second thing is that because these trials are so recent, the Moderna study was still recruiting in September. They were still kind of running the trial, the Pfizer trial, in the latter part of October. And so, you know, less than a month from when these trials are really underway, we're hearing these results. So it's not telling us anything, absolutely nothing, about, you know, how long is their immunity. It may very well be that they're, you know, to be honest and truthful about this, it may very well be that people are getting neutralizing antibodies from the vaccine. But however, how long does that last? Is it going to last a month, 2 months? We have absolutely no idea. A year, and also we have absolutely no safety data. So those are the two really concerning things for me regarding this. The other thing is that when you're in the case of the Pfizer trial, there were almost 44,000 participants in that trial. So they're only making the statement that there were the 94 cases. Okay, 94 cases where the COVID was found, supposedly, in them. We don't know what kind of test they're using to make that determination. For all we know, I mean, if you were one of these companies, and since the PCR, if they're using PCR to determine this, because it's based on how you set the sensitivity. Well, if you really want to fudge the results, you can just set your, the PCR to very low sensitivity, and you can come up with a lot of negatives to claim that, you know, people don't have the virus. So you could actually be getting a lot of false positives with the PCR. It's not just false negatives. It's not just the false positives. You could set it all the way low to get just a lot of false negatives as well. So we have absolutely no idea what's going on there. So if you're just looking at 94 cases out of over 43,000 people in the trial, you're not really, and then to make this kind of a claim of 90% efficacy is rather silly.
It's insane. It's insane. It shouldn't be accepted by the media, and they accepted it and promoted it. By the government, they accepted and promoted it. So I'm very concerned that there's no legitimacy in science and public health any longer. And let's not forget, wasn't it the British Medical Journal who published an article, quote, COVID, government buried negative data on its favored antibody test, quote, the UK government delayed the findings of the Public Health England study that questions the accuracy of a leading COVID antibody test just as it was about to announce that it had spent $99 million on buying 1 million of the tests. The study published online this week in the BritishMedicalJournal.com is the first independent assessment of the test and finds it to be significantly less accurate than a manufacturer-funded study has claimed. If the test is used in the community as intended and assuming that 10% of recipients have previously been infected, around 1 in 5 positive tests would be a false positive, the finding study. And it went on to mention that, you know, this was published in the British Medical Journal. So once again, is this being told to all the people who took the test that your test results are inconclusive because we're finding that there's a lot of negative data that the government intentionally buried. They didn't tell you the truth, just like Merck didn't tell the people the truth about the increased heart attack and stroke from Vioxx until over 60,000 to 500,000 died from it. They paid some money, kept their profit, and business as usual. I'm concerned because everybody's been indemnified. The test makers identified, the vaccine makers identified, the government agents indemnified. I just feel that the American public is being grossly exploited and governments around the world. The tests, in my opinion, should not be called definitive because none are. There's no gold standard test to measure viral load. Doesn't exist in the PCR. So what good does it do to tell someone, oh, you just tested positive, stay home, see your doctor, start taking resveratrol or whatever it was. And that, by the way, that drug showed to be a complete bust, but it didn't matter.
Remdesivir, yeah.
Remdesivir. It was garbage. And yet people will take it. They will make hundreds of millions of dollars off a worthless drug, but a good drug that's inexpensive in the first 7 days, like hydroxychloroquine with zinc and an antibiotic, does work. So everything is being played against the public. We're being lied to, and then you've got little emperors, governors of states, using their executive power to close businesses, to close schools, and yet the least vulnerable are the youngest people, healthy older people. Your final thoughts?
Well, my final thought is really media amnesia. Because if we go back not that long, a couple months ago, when Moderna had released its phase one trial, what's coming up in the news now with Pfizer and Moderna are their phase three trials. But when it was the phase one, even CBS News was reporting the adverse side effects during that phase one trial. 80% of the people that received the low dose amount in the trial had adverse effects. And then after the second dose, it was 100%. And for the group that was receiving the highest dosage group, the 250 microgram amount, there was 100% of the people suffered from side effects. And if we recall, you know, Moderna stopped. There was a lot of concern. But now with these recent reports, it's like we've forgotten about that. That's not being stated at all. So, in fact, there was that crazy, insane headline. I think I had sent you earlier something about the fact that you get a side effect means that the vaccine's working. You remember that one?
That was the dumbest statement I've ever seen.
Right. I mean, if there's a side effect, there's something happening in your body. You know, I mean, it's that much of common sense. So, this is... It's very disturbing. And, there was the researchers, both at University of Pennsylvania and Duke, and came out stating, this is a quote from them recently about the mRNA vaccines, which is both Pfizer and Moderna. They're doing the mRNA vaccines. And it says mRNA vaccines have potential safety issues, including local systemic inflammation, stimulation of autoreactive antibodies and autoimmunity, as well as development of edema and blood clots. So,
let's just say you're a person suffering from thrombosis. The last thing you want is something that will cause a blood clot, because that's one of the problems. What if you're suffering from an autoimmune condition already, which tens of millions of Americans do, like arthritis? All right, that's just another example. But those people are not in their studies. They're using healthy people in their studies, but are going to give these vaccines to people with comorbidities, and then we're going to see what I am very fearful of will be a mass amount of people dying, and far more than what could be from the virus itself. That's my fear. But they have shown nothing in the way of being honest and transparent. They have shown us nothing. And yet, remind yourself, none of these vaccines are meant to cure you, prevent death, or prevent hospitalization. They're only meant to prevent mild impact, which means if you have Pfizer's study protocol states case counts if a trial participant has a positive test, and then again, they don't tell us what test they've taken, or one symptom like a cough or chills or diarrhea. And according to Mary Holland and Robert Kennedy Jr., there are 1,400 human pathogens, including 200 viruses known to infect humans. Except for hepatitis A, B, C, and HIV, the study protocol is silent on testing for other infectious causes of the participant's symptoms. In other words, he suffers from confirmation bias. A cough and a positive test equals COVID, they say, even when a alternative possible diagnosis. No, it represents a cold. It represents an allergy. It represents, you see, they're not looking for any other alternative. Now, if they want to do it correctly, anyone that manifests a symptom, they would have additional tests done for other conditions the person might suffer from, and they haven't done that. So I'm just very concerned that we have no honesty in the American media. We have no honesty in our body politic, left or right. We have no honesty in corporate America. Profits, profits, profits. We have no honesty in Wall Street and the banking community. And so when the public lines up to take your vaccines, which you have every right to do, just remember, you're putting your trust in pathological liars, sociopaths, and people, in my opinion, have never done anything that benefits you without first benefiting themselves, irrespective of what the likely side effects are to you. Thank you, Richard, and thank all of you for listening, and have a nice day.